Chapter 7. Lysander, the Ally Idiot. Cicero wins his race without true contest, except in the fifth lap, where a Carthii-sponsored chariot nearly crushes him against the central spina. Leaving my Praetorians at the gate, I cross the staging courtyard to give Cicero a piece of my mind. Caeba wanders along behind, innocuous, but always searching for danger. The courtyard smells of hay, manure, leather, and horses. The smells wake memories of Virginia au Augustus. Of all the girls who came and went through my grandmother's palace, Virginia was my favourite. I feel a faint longing for her easy smile and unpredictable conversations. Certainly that smile hid a mouthful of daggers, but Virginia had a way of making you feel privileged to have lost to her in a game of chess, or an idle bet on which songbird egg would hatch first in the garden's aviaries. I wonder if she still has time to visit her stables on Mars, or if, like me, this war has swallowed her up. She was always happier after a ride in the Palatine's Park. Come to think of it, so was I. Arcades enclosed the staging ground, providing shade and tables for the teams. Young gold charioteers and the sordid entourages that inevitably orbit such scurrilous characters sip wine and play dice. Many toast me as I pass, but not the Carthii, who sneer and insult me under their breath. Beneath the arcade bearing the winged heel of Team Hermes, Cicero inspects his reins system. He's due to race again before midday, and will race nearly 20 times before the games are through. All of them in that stupid little helmet. Cicero senses my approach. Instead of turning, he joins the grooms in wiping down the horses. Lysander, I know, I know, I know, I know. I chase him around one of the horses, Blood of Empire. You've promised me you would not race. Blood tries to nuzzle me and nearly knocks me down in doing so. My friend sighs. He peers at me through a tangle of golden curls. My good man, search your memory. I said I promised I would take your recommendation to heart, and I certainly did. He touches his breast. In fact, my heart was so torn over the matter, I nearly sprained my wrists holding it together. He tosses a sweat-soaked rag to a groom and extricates himself from the horses to sit on the step up to his chariot's basket. He accepts a silver cup of wine from one of his stewards, drains it, and calls for more. Wine? It's Thessalonican. Roth brought 10 barrels. God knows how he got it. Man knows his smugglers. Weird fellow, really. Always with the innuendos. Can't tell if he's trying to filch my purse or slag me. You do recall that the charioteers of Rome were slaves, I confirm, as the steward refills his cup. Rich, dripping in whores, but slaves still. Is that your way of telling me that, unlike them, I have so much to lose? Cicero asks. Your father doesn't have the reins any longer, I reply. Your house is yours to guide. Your father... My father lost his planet, followed by his honour, Cicero says flatly. Then he spent his life and his favourite son to reclaim both. You know his fearful disposition, his frugal nature, but he loved this sport. This hippodrome is in our blood. His eyes go misty and far away as he looks up at the stone heights of the stadium's southern face. This sand belongs to me. I have no less to lose than the meanest slave of Rome. What concerns are there but honour? What is there to lose but life? You ask me to risk my life for you, your claim on the morning chair, when all know the odds against that. This, by far, is the safest sport. He sips his wine and casts me an imploring look. You and my sister do not understand because the insides of your minds are ordered against the guts of a clock. My mind is a wandering, haphazard organ, but it is not without its own breed of order. His eyes drift toward the driver's arcade, where the Carthii-sponsored charioteers lounge in the shade, listening to one of their fellows play the harp. Yes, vanity is in my nature, but it would mean very much to me if you would have faith that I'm not being vainglorious. I will not have Mercury insulted by Venus, carrying away the glory on a day meant to honour my father and the planet he died for. What would that tell our citizens? That Mercury will only be a shadow of what it once was? That Votum is the least of the houses of the conquering? I race for more than mere laurels, dear friend. I race for the spirit of my people. He nudges me. Our people. I enjoy Cicero's candour, his general optimism, and his love of conspiracy, but it is his buffoonish bouts of bravery that I admire the most. Others think him flighty, a party boy more interested in the arts than war. Far from it. It's strange, the friends we make. Cicero could not be any more different than Ajax, my best friend from childhood. Back then, Ajax was pleasant and self-conscious, while Cicero was a famed nightmare full of mischief, arrogance, and general trouble. Life since has made Ajax a selfish braggadocio, grotesquely skilled at killing to prove he is not weak, while Cicero doesn't mind others thinking he's weak, and even when he thinks of his own interests, manages, I think accidentally, to nurse along the interests of others. Yet I still miss Ajax. I snort at the stupid power of childhood bonds. What? Cicero asks. I deflect. Something your sister said months ago. If a charm offensive is needed, call on Cicero indeed. If it means that much to you, you have my blessing. Not that you need it. After losing both Cassius to Darrow and Ajax to Atalantia, I'm careful not to tread on my friend's spirits these days. You do see me. I told Glerastes as much, he says with a delighted smile. Where is the old bag, anyhow? Mayhaps I'll dedicate the next victory to him. He left, I say. You chased him away, no doubt, Cicero says. You must be gentler with him. I am gentle with him. You are kind, but you are not gentle. Artists are sensitive about their work, and you're his work of personal redemption, he says. I frown. He helped Darrow, didn't he? The storm gods were as much his devils as they were the reapers. He has much to atone for. He spots something over my shoulder. Oh, shit, incoming cretin. Centaur or bull? The hornier breed. Tharsis and his menagerie are headed straight for us. The idiot, I mutter. Didn't you tell him to keep his distance? Cicero asks. Several times, I say. Cicero ducks his head. He'll get us all skinned by grimace sociopaths. I'll be stuffed and strung as a puppet. You'll be skinned. Don't say that. That's terrible. Oh, gods, he's getting closer. Do you think he's seen us? Cicero tries to hide in the basket of his chariot. Cicero, my good man, a true Flavius Scorpus you are, Tharsis calls. Cicero pops up like a prairie dog at the compliment. Well, I won't say I disagree, Cicero says. What a spectacle! What bravado! When he's close enough, Tharsis's tone darkens. I can read lips from 100 meters, you slanderous goat rapists. We know. I clap Tharsis on his muscled shoulder, and my hand comes away smelling of sandalwood and pheromones. Yet even being reminded you were violating our agreement, you kept on coming. It'd be even more peculiar if I kept my distance from such illustrious company. He leans in, flirtatious or just being clever about hiding his mouth from lip-readers. An audio distorter vibrates on his middle finger. You're not doing your job, Loon. You're supposed to slide your hands into moneyed panties to finance our grand crusade, not finger-blast grey prostates down in the cheap seats. It's my brother's job to be loved by soldiers. You are just a broker for men and money. Money your brother will just waste at syndicate auctions, Cicero says. Tharsis brandishes a smile that is all too smug. A waste, you say? Several more of Valeria's brothers have joined their racing team now. One of the Carthii throws a grape at one of Tharsis's poet friends. Another tosses a chicken bone. I tilt my head at the Praetorians to discourage the instigators. Marcus, a sun-dark water buffalo of a centurion, one of Roan's favourites, is only too happy to oblige. Tharsis, go away. I flip him a few credits, as if I've lost a bet. He pockets them, grinning at my discomfort. You're going to start a brawl that won't end here. Please. They touch one hair on my illustrious head and my brother will blow the construction spindles on their dockyards one by one until I'm returned to him. How then will the war be won when the enemy has their docks and the society doesn't have theirs? Tharsis purrs. Quell your anxiety, Palatine child. I've come only to give you news from Apollonius. While others, like that fool Ajax, burned precious helium, prowling the system for the elusive wolf, my brother has lured him from the shadows for a test of martial valour.
Inconceivable! Cicero squawks. That broadcast worked!
Indeed. And soon my brother will lay Darrow low. He touches my arm. Calm your loins, precocious catamite. Your old flame Cassius is snared as well, and will be gifted within the fortnight for your pleasure. Mayhaps the Lady Bellona will unlock her vault for you then. I stare at him. Cassius is alive? He tried to free Severo with Darrow? Yes. And your brother has them both? I ask. Tharsis looks so smug he might faint. Yes. I'm staggered. I thought Cassius died out on the rim until I saw him rescue Darrow from Heliopolis 8 months ago. I assumed since then, with Ajax, the Dustwalkers, and others looking for them, that Cassius had met some grisly end. Cassius was like a brother for 10 years. Imperfect, yes, but a brother still. I preferred him dead, in a way. At least his end was noble. It hurt, but it was better than thinking him alive and fighting at Darrow's side instead of mine. It is a hard game, this, so I must be hard. I will give him to his mother, Julia. Perhaps that is the key I am missing to open her vaults.
Look at that, already counting the coins, Tharsis says. You!
Tharsis cries, distracted by the Bellona charioteer exiting the shade of her arcade to scold one of her grooms at work on her horses. Tharsis is off, his muscular arms gesticulating like a mantis in a mating dance.
You brilliant woman! Of course you know me, but I must know you. What grace, what bravado, what spectacle!
Cicero and I stare after him until he accosts the young Bellona charioteer. My mind whirls. Apollonius has Darrow and Cassius. A great anxiety sloughs away at the thought, replaced by another anxiety. Darrow must die, of course. But must Cassius die too? Cicero folds his arms and pouts.
What's the matter with you? I ask.
Cicero sighs.
It's just spectacle, bravado. Those were the same compliments he gave me.
I spare him a second glance. He's not joking. I do love Cicero, but sometimes I wonder if I wouldn't be taken more seriously with the dread Ajax Our Grimace at my side.
Night falls on Heliopolis, and the races give way to theatre and parties. Laughter and music from rooftop celebrations and coastal galas drift through the lamplit streets. The cobbled path I walk wends along the wharf and then through a grove of starburst trees to an amphitheatre cut into the side of a cliff. A play is on, but that is not why I have come. I've come because a grand ship named the Dustmaker slid into orbit at midday, and I must meet its master. I leave my Praetorians behind and descend to stand behind the back risers. Down on the stage, backed by the sea, an agonized Oedipus is realizing his queen is actually his mother. Low colors on the seats and the embankments, huddled with spiced wine and sweets, weep. Discordant sounds of celebration creep across the water from a floating island in the far distance, as if mocking Oedipus's agony. I doubt anyone else notices. Thessian, the famed violet actor of Earth, is old now, but age has not diminished his craft. Filled with emotion by his performance, I lean against an olive tree and watch until Oedipus blinds himself. The chorus speaks, and the crowd melts away from the amphitheatre, back toward the bars and acrobatic displays by the wharf. I descend into the amphitheatre to intercept two large men in dusky traveller cloaks just as they stand from their seats. No one could mistake them for being anything other than what they are. Peerless, scarred.
They say Thessian could make a stone weep, yet your eyes are dry. Are you Stoics, or has Thessian lost his touch? I say, as they turn.
The older scar is thinner than his colleague. He answers laconically.
Mercury is hot. I forgot to hydrate.
Honestly, the answer is like the man. Helios Aulux is austere, unimpressed, and as serious as a gun barrel. Nicknamed Sunburn for his affinity for tortship raids and his flushed complexion, he was the truth knight of the Rim Dominion for 40 years before becoming co-consul with Dido at the onset of the war. He is cordial, but clearly not excited to see me.
Salve, Maulun.
Helios shakes my hand. His is sheathed in an antique cestus, a battle glove comprised of interwoven golden bands that ensnare the user's arm from the elbow to the tips of their fingers, that gives the wearer mastery over his warship. War scenes and the word dustmaker are etched into the metal, along with a line from the Iliad. I, too, shall lie in the dust when I am dead, but now let me win noble renown. This particular cestus is named the Binds of Zeus. The younger peerless guard is a hurricane contained in a lead drum that any man, even Apollonius, should be cautious in opening. He is thick-set, gloomy, soft-spoken, and one of the rising heroes in the Rim military. His name is Diomedes Aura, the eldest son of Romulus and Dido. I'm delighted to see the man. He may be the only person I desperately want to like me for no reason other than I find him honourable, admirable, and utterly immune to everything. Charm, flattery, bribery, or any of the devices employed so often in the Corps. Everything, that is, save merit. Diomedes likes unsung heroes, but all I have to my name so far are a few songs and one horse charge. It makes me a little insecure around the man. I extend a hand to him.
Aura, or should I say Storm Knight, or Legate, or Twin Taker? You're truly racking up the honours, Goodman.
He does not take my hand. I'm shocked, embarrassed. I'd thought he and I to be approaching friendship after journeying together to propose the Rim's entry into the war to Atalantia, but our months apart seem to have chilled that growing intimacy. His sister, Seraphina, died in the desert on our mission to take down a storm god on Mercury. Does he hold resentment? Helios looks away. Diomedes says, formally,
An apology is due, Aulun. I lied to you. I claimed Cassius was dead on Io when he was not. I have been censured by my order, but not by you.
You may have first strikes if you wish. Helios murmurs, still looking away.
Why did you lie? I ask Diomedes.
Cassius fought with honour, but was shown none in return. I wished to spare his life. I knew no other way but to claim his death and secrete him away. He broke his word by returning to the war.
Diomedes pauses, as did one of my servants in abetting his escape. If all lies were so kind, I'd never wish to hear the truth. I forfeit my strikes if only you take my hand, I say, and stick out my hand again. He takes it with a relieved smile. I must admit my surprise in hearing you two are on planet. When Dido rebuffed my invitation, I did not think to expect a Rim deputation. Nor is this one,
Helios replies. I frown. If it is not a deputation, it can only be one thing, an insult.
I am here as a private citizen to honour an oath to my daughter.
His hand brushes the short-bladed Kitari on his belt. A House Dionysus ring of the Ionian Institute is melted into the pommel.
Before she died, she made me swear I would see Thessian perform once more.
His grim face skews into the approximation of a smile.
She always thought that I heeded duty so much I forgot to live.
A thin excuse. I mask my disappointment.
And how does living feel? I yearn to return to my ship and the war,
he confesses.
Living isn't for everyone, I suppose, I say.
They watch me, awkward, as if waiting for me to leave. I feel like a fool. When I was told the capital ship of the Rim's fleet was in orbit, I thought Helios's presence indicated a desire to speak with me. I was wrong.
You're both to be complimented on your successes in the war. Thanks to the two of you, we have the Republic on their heels. They barely dare to leave Mars for fear of your fleets.
Helios is polite, but barely.
You have done well on Mercury, too, by the looks of your party. Still much to be done, I fear, especially in Tyche, but the iron rolls and the sea calms. I'd be honoured if you would join me in the Pulvinar tomorrow for the Pegasus jouts, and then for the launch of the Lightbringer.
Helios looks to the massive ship lying to the south. No doubt he thinks it Rim property, owing to the fact it was built in the dockyards of Ganymede, and then killed those docks under Darrow's command.
No, Helios says. This was a stop of convenience. We are en route to Earth. Tomorrow we pass Sol for the summit. We depart in an hour.
What summit? I say.
The dictators in Rome. 9 days from now, Atalantia has promised to unveil her plans for the next stage of the war.
It's plain as day. They know I was not invited.
The next stage? I ask. Mars?
Helios shrugs.
If not, there will be consequences. Atalantia cannot continue to drag her feet while my people fight her war. It is time to end this. I would ask you to relay that, but I hear you don't share her confidences, only her bed.
He looks over at Diomedes.
The core is an odd place, is it not?
Diomedes looks embarrassed. The rudeness from Helios, even for a Moonie, is startling.
You're making a point of insulting me, it seems.
Why?
I am aware you invited Consul Ra to your games. Dido may flirt with core power struggles. She is Venusian by birth, after all. I do not flirt. Unless you can move Atalantia's fleets off Earth and Luna and towards Mars, do not communicate with us. Your office is a domestic one. Stay on your lane. Is that why the Moon Lord sent you to the core? To make sure Dido shows restraint?
I probe. It would make sense for the isolationist faction to get cold feet with both the Dust and Dragon Armadas away, and only the Shadow Armada and the local garrisons left to defend the walls of the Rim.
Nervous people, Moonies. Dido wanted this war. I did not. I am here so the Moon Lords can be sure there are no hooks in our lip when the war is won. Back to isolationism, then.
Helios glances at the Praetorians watching from the rim of the amphitheatre.
What do your Praetorians think of you consorting with a man who led a squadron at the Battle of Ilium? Their brothers' and sisters' blood is on my blade. My Praetorians are an extension of me, and I believe, if we are defined by the conflicts of the past, we will never grow into anything better than a gnarled reflection of ancient feuds.
Words. I watched Rhea burn, lad, he says.
There is a sickness here in the Corps for which the only cure is quarantine. We should not be here, but we are. And when we leave, I will burn the bridge behind us.
So much for the unity I always dreamt of.
Diomedes, surely you see the value in retaining a connection between Rim and Corps. With your horticulture and ship design and our manpower and resources, we could look even past the garden of this little sun. There are worlds to build across the stars.
I am a simple knight, he replies, as though I get the sense he is reining himself in. In fact, after seeing him fight out on the Rim, I feel his self-control is the only thing that protects the rest of us.
I do not think it prudent for inexperienced men or women to venture into matters of state.
From what I know of you, simple is exactly the wrong word, I say.
Helios actually laughs.
Well, they were wrong. You're not blindsided by your own reflection. Not in both eyes, at least.
Jove, the man is an absolute savage. Still, I try to win him.
And where is Adelantia hosting her summit in Rome?
He snorts.
The Colosseum. She plays games with you, says the man who holds circuses.
My office is a domestic one. Should I not stay in my lane?
Diomedes smiles, a rare thing, and even Helios eyes me with a little more interest.
I received the warning of the incoming man from my Praetorians only slightly before Diomedes alerts Helios.
Helios follows his gaze to see a tall gold striding toward us from the far side of the theatre.
I go cold inside. The newcomer is slender, pale-faced, with gently slanting eyes. He wears a brown cloak and a wig of brilliant blue hair. Those in the departing crowd who see his face wilt.
Atlas Aura favors us with a neutral smile as he comes to a stop. I almost gasp when I see the very serious man in the very ridiculous wig.
And here I thought Thessian underappreciated. What a constellation of admirers he has.
He sees all three of us staring at his wig. He shrugs.
When in Heliopolis?
I knew Helios was on planet the moment his boots touched ground. That I can't say the same for Atlas is terrifying but hardly surprising.
How long has he been here?
Atlas greets Helios and Diomedes, but neither man takes his hand. Atlas raises an eyebrow at the bad manners and nods to the binds of Zeus around Helios's arm.
Had I a moonbreaker in my palm, I'd shake even the devil's hand with a grin.
The two men stare at one another. They are similar in build, though Atlas is longer-limbed, slightly thinner, and slightly taller.
I do not consort with traitors, Helios replies.
As a boy, Atlas was given as hostage to my grandmother only to become one of her greatest tools. While his brother Romulus is revered as a hero even in death, Atlas is seen as the blackest of traitors. Truthfully, it's not exactly fair. He didn't choose to be a hostage.
Atlas sighs.
Helios, we ply the same trade, you and I. Truth. But ask yourself, between the two of us, who is the one who has broken an oath, and who is the one who has not?
Helios, a staunch advocate for the first Moon Lord's rebellion, is unamused.
Thank you for the play, Loon. If you will pardon us, he says.
Without a word for Atlas, Helios turns to depart. Diomedes follows.
Nephew, Atlas calls.
Diomedes stops but does not turn.
I was sorry to hear of my brother's death. He was a great man, your father. We had our differences, namely your mother, but I loved him very much. I have no doubt you'll live up to our name.
Diomedes quarter turns.
Diomedes,
Helios snaps. Grudgingly, Diomedes follows his mentor away.
Atlas watches until they've left the theatre.
"Quite the pair, those two," he says.
"That is the wrong man to needle," I say of Diomedes.
"It's good to know where the nerves are."
"I thought you were on Luna," I say.
"Starvation is a slow boil. The pan is set, the burner is on. I can't really make the loonies eat each other any faster. Once they topple the Vox, Atlantia may need me again."
"Why are you here, then?" I ask.
"For the same reason as Helios."
His cold eyes wait for my face to betray me.
"To see Thessian, of course, the greatest mummer of our age."
He smiles, choking, and scratches a scab on his neck. It looks like someone tried and succeeded in cutting his throat. He sees me looking.
"You should see the other man. Well, you should see this whole continent, really."
"You were on Earth then as well? I heard rumors." He nods, as if pacifying North America was nothing.
"Atlantia thought I was too. Brutal. Oh well, let Falth deal with the Rockies. Atlantia has sent me to convalesce in the mountain hot springs here, but also to review your performance."
"You're here as a prefect," I say, surprised. "A finance snooper. You?"
"I've a knack for numbers, especially when it comes to counting soldiers, and even I need time away from the front lines. I'm here to help. Your expenditures, well, Atlantia wants to be sure her betrothed does not spend himself into ruin. You will, of course, make your people available to me."
"Of course."
"Good. I won't trouble you further. Pretend I'm not even here."
He watches me for a few moments.
"It is good to see you, Lysander. You've done great work here. Truly. The people of Mercury are loyal citizens. They didn't deserve Darrow's chaos. Atlantia is pleased. Even she cannot go a day without hearing how beloved you are by the people of Mercury."
He pauses, then says,
"Your parents would be proud."
Atlas is so unnerving, it is easy to forget he was close with my parents. Kalandora told me to trust him, but I can't bring myself to do so. All I know is he's Atlantia's attack dog, and Atlantia killed my parents. He doesn't know that I know that secret. But even if he did, what would he do? I can't help but toy with danger.
"I'm having a gala to launch the Lightbringer. I'd be honored if..."
He laughs. "Don't be silly. I'd kill the mood."
"Simply no one wants to come to my parties."
With a smile of good humor, he claps my shoulder and departs. Watching him go, I'm filled with dread. If Atlantia is so pleased, then why did she send her headsman? He stops as if hearing my thoughts and calls back,
"Lysander, your parents were dear to me. You know that. But there are plans in motion that cannot be derailed, not even by you. Tend to Mercury. Relax. Let the war be won. It is no shame to be loved."
When he is gone, I stand in silence for a few moments. The theatre is now empty. The torches cast shadows over the stone risers. I hear wind move the grass behind me. "Kyber, follow him. Discreetly."
"Your will, Dominus."
The following day, after hours in the sun, glad-handing, scheming Peerless, and hours more soliciting creditors at the theatre, then the Pegasus jousts, it is a relief to land at Glyresti's estate. The knowledge Atlas is on planet and my obsession with deciphering his parting words does not stop the day's tension from melting away.
Mindful of Cicero's words about Glorastes, I thought a visit was in order. Exeter, Glorastes' brown steward, greets me with my favourite cactus wine and leads me to the garden attached to Glorastes' workshop. Be gentle with him today, Dominus. He is nervous. He fears your machinations.
Better then he doesn't know of Atlas's presence.
In your opinion, does he feel at fault still? I asked the pale valet. For the storm gods?
He is at fault, Dominus.
Glorastes is at work, hunched over a hollow moulder in his workshop when we enter. He shades out his work when he hears our footsteps.
Lysander, whatever are you doing here? I thought you were at the opening gala.
I thought I might skip it, I say, and flop down on a couch.
What? Don't be ridiculous. You have allies to foster.
I can't be too over-eager. Cicero will charm them. Horatio will reassure them. I must be a rare sight. Anyway, I wanted to celebrate this evening with a true friend, without a wall of black and purple. He searches for my Praetorians. I left them on the ship, even Kyber. He is immensely pleased, yet gives a little shudder.
That whisper makes my skin crawl. But really, Lysander, you can't afford to insult your guests. Wait, what did you mean? Celebrate.
I smile. There's news from Apollonius. News you'll never believe.